We're going to pass out cards if anybody has any questions for anybody on the panel. For obvious reasons, we'll need to have them in writing.
Except for mind control.
That's right.
We're talking free speech. Let's have some free speech.
No, I didn't. We could take a question at a time.
I strongly suggest that we have them in writing.
Well, if Ron says.
Yeah.
No, if I say. I strongly suggest that we have them in writing.
Well, I think you all have some smart. I was reading the book.
We don't want to take it.
Jesse? This question is a FACNet website.
I had
trouble downloading it to unzip it, webmaster.
I'm not sure what you're referring to. Are you referring to, there was several years ago, the FACNet large monolithic zip file that contained it.
Right, you know, it's like it says you can download this whole website, right? I did it once, and
right.
I could unzip it, but now when I try it, it's like a GIGZ file.
Oh, yeah.
I can't find anything that will do that.
First of all, may I ask a question? Are you trying to get the current image of the website?
No, I'm just trying to download everything that the 9 megabytes you have in there is.
Currently. See, there used to be some files which were distributed as a monolithic zip file when the FACNet was originally sued a couple of years ago. Are you referring to that? Or are you referring to
the current?
Currently, okay.
Current downloadable site.
I agree that it's a format called GZIP. For Unix, people like the computer system called Unix. That's a known, but it's not popular. I can put it up in ZIP if you like.
I would love it up.
Okay,
I try to do it every so many months.
How about I write that down and do it as soon as I can?
The previous webmaster, who was a college student in Boulder, was a Unix freak, and he put that GZ file up there. And,
there are
and
until
tips,
three
you know
old
probably
still went up. But,
okay, this question is from Sylvia, one of our Scientologists visiting us today, and it is specifically to Grady. Please tell us some of the graphics, something postings, just wait a second, which were put up by you specifically, those against Helena Coburn. As moderator, I'm not interested in having you answer that. I know what Sylvia's doing, and it's not necessary. But I did read your question you asked. Okay? So we're cool.
Well, you're censoring it.
Next question.
I'm not
censoring it. You're not
censoring
it.
Next
you're not
question.
Not even answering it.
Sylvia, that's enough, okay? Next question. Can groups identify who has visited their site?
I can answer that one.
Okay,
the answer is usually yes. That groups can identify who has visited their site. Fortunately, there are pieces of software that you can use to circumvent that. One of them is called the Anonymizer, www.anonymizer.com, and it provides a little box, and it'll look like your search request is coming from the Anonymizer and not from your own particular computer. I understand there's also a German version called the Anonymizer, which is nicer than the Anonymizer. there are a number of ways to do that. The easiest way for people who don't want to be dealing with that, go to a public library. Public libraries almost all have public internet terminals now, and I think that that's reasonably anonymous as long as the library doesn't make you sign your name that you were visiting that terminal at that time. Does that answer the question? But generally, logs can be kept, and logs are rarely analyzed because of the large number of hits, but it can be done.
Okay. Next question. Can you discuss the responsibilities and ramifications if legally copyrighted material is posted against the owner's wishes? Is the bulletin board responsible? Who would like to answer that question?
Realizing this is not legal.
I'm not an attorney or have extensive experience in the last couple of years in copyright law. generally, naturally, in this country, we have a copyright that is the exclusive right to distribute material that's actually built into our Constitution, one of our constitutional guarantees. The reason for that, of course, was to, in fact, it says in the Constitution, to promote the growth of arts, to make sure that authors would get the benefit of their fruits of their work so that it would encourage more authors to produce more works and earn enough money so that they continue to enrich our civilization. The people also have a right to in newsworthy events to quote what's called fair use. Now there are some exceptions. I mentioned that word fair use. In the copyright law there are four statutory exceptions to the copyright holder's exclusive use of a copyrighted work. And in fact, anything you write, anything you say, is copyrighted immediately when you utter it. Now, you don't have to have any special marks or anything else. The exceptions include small, making small quotes for reportage to illustrate other arguments. It's just as long as you don't appropriate their work in order to, create income or deprive them of income for that purpose, but for news purposes and that kind of thing, to try to expose fraud. So that's a legitimate, completely legitimate use of quoting portions. Now, the rub is what constitutes an unfair use. In a line of a poem, one line of a poem might be considered not unfair use. In another case, a Salinger case, just a few lines of an entire book is considered unfair use because it was considered the core of the work. So another case is quoting entire works in a school context might be considered fair use. So it's up to the federal judge and case law to decide what is, in a particular instance, federal use. So if you happen to be a litigious group who's intent on not distributing their work, then of course you can exploit that ambiguity to fully, to excessively litigate that issue. So the answer is a lot of people around the world who do not hearken to United States copyright law do what they believe is fair, and the internet itself will chastise them internally if they do more than what we consider fair. And that's the best I can answer. There's no single law which covers the internet. There's no single country which controls the entire internet. So I am sure that as long as Scientology, for example, over-litigates or litigates what they consider their interest on the internet, then I'm sure that their copyright material will continue to appear forever from wherever country that it currently is coming from.
Last night, I drove down here from New Hampshire, and most of the way, I would say that I was observing the speed limit. However, if you go back a few years before the speed limits were actually changed in many parts of the country, there were a lot of people on the internet who considered that copyright itself was sort of the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit of the internet. There are a large group of people actually on the internet who believe that information of any sort, in its entirety, if necessary, wants to be free. And there are a large number of people who do just that in order to propagate material that they think will be of interest to a large number of people.
There is actually case law, right? Okay, go ahead.
Most recent cases of Scientology cases, Netcom, and they settled. So I think that
there's one more case.
Oh, is there since then?
It's still an inchoate body of law because, for example, right now, if you host infringing material on your site, then you could be sued for infringement. But if you point to it with one of these URLs, right now there is precedent that you're not liable unless the intent of that URL was to violate copyright. So, however, that could change. A district judge may change that momentarily. The same with trademark, all intellectual property laws, trade secret, all of them are in a state of flux. Right now, if a trade secret is published on the internet, it's lost forever. Scientology has argued that that shouldn't be the case, that they can somehow take that back, but so far even sympathetic judges have not seen it that way. But it's in a state of flux, so it's hard to say. There's even no books out there as current, that have the current state of the law, and I don't know what to suggest to confirm.
I'd recommend Mike Godwin's recent book, Cyber Rights,
Electronic Freedom Foundation.
I hate the attorney I quoted earlier.
There's another question here. Thank you. What is your position on FACNET? I'm a board member of FACNET.
I'm not affiliated with FACNET. Tell you the truth.
Now, this is a question. I can't fully read it, so whoever questioned it is, maybe you can help me. It says, why doesn't Scientology say...
About the Providence case, is that correct? The judge... would not allow expert testimony about Scientology. I don't know the reason for it, but I know that that's the basis.
Well, the question is, okay, why didn't Scientology say in the Providence case wouldn't allow anything said about Scientology or an expert witness on Scientology? Anyone can win a one-sided case.
I think that that's the basis of the appeal, that the dentist was held, did win the case, as Sylvia said, and it's on appeal. The attorney says he would like to introduce expert witnesses about Scientology. That's all I know, and that's just from the Providence Journal.
Okay. Here's a question generally about websites. How can you best and cost-effectively promote your website cross-referencing?
as you've heard of search engines like Altavista, the Hotbot, others, there's probably about, there's a total of 200 of them, of which about 6 or 8 are the most significant. Commercial services do say for $30, we'll submit them to all the hundreds of search engines. Actually, you can do that for nothing. And I can help you. I can give you pointers to where there are free sites.
The best way is to get indexed on the search engines and become known is to have interesting content that people are going to link to it. If you've got something to say, if you're storing something, lists of links are generally less interesting than originally stored content. And people are going to find that information, link to it, and you'll be included in more search engines that way.
Here's another question. If the internet has the capability to broadly spread information, how is one to determine what is really true? After all, if you want to verify it, it would be everywhere this true. I think that's what that is. I think the veracity of information is an issue whether it's on the internet or in a library or wherever it is. And I think...
or in a Church of Scientology advertisement.
That's right.
Thank you, Bob. And I think that the same rules of thumb apply on internet information as any other kind of information. It's incumbent upon the person who's doing the research to get independent verification in whatever ways that particular information calls for, either by contacting the author or by talking to other people who've maybe reported on similar issues or whatever.
Well, simply an observation that truth, again, tends to reinforce each other, different aspects of the truth. But lies tend to be idiosyncratic. They tend to be not reinforce each other. So if you enjoy the smorgasbord of the internet, if you get enough conflicting opinions, you will be able to figure out the truth. As a mosaic, it will just salt out, it will just appear. So I think it's the mechanism for doing that, the internet is second bar none for achieving knowledge through comparing sources.
Okay.
You didn't read my question, Stacy.
Okay, I've read all the questions. Just while I'm dealing with that with John, are there any other questions? Are there any other people that would like to ask any questions or whatever?
Jesse, over there.
The question is, do all Scientologists have to have a net nanny? Are they able to function without one? For your information, the net nanny is what people call the sensor program that Scientologists are required to put on their computer. I think
that's
other people...
On. That is
you
a fault.
You're interrupting the public assembly.
That's fine. If you'd like to...
You're interrupting the public assembly. That's your warning, sir. Please.
All right.
Thank you.
She was...
Okay.
You're welcome.
You said something false.
You're welcome to write down.
Okay.
If you have a question. Okay.
Very well.
Just one thing that I can say about it. I happen to be a former Scientologist, so I am familiar with some of the ways in which the organization works. The answer to this question is, of course, any person is free to either put the software on their computer or not, hypothetically speaking. But for a Scientologist in good standing, it is made known that this is something that they need to do, and they use this net nanny because it's something that they've been required to do. So I think I would have to say that only fairly renegade Scientologists would not have this censorship software on their computer because it is communicated to a Scientologist that the things that are being said by this long list of names that are on the censorship list are false. And as Bob said, N-theta, which is, you know, basically falsehood, lies, et cetera, about Scientology. So why would a Scientologist want to read lies and falsehoods about Scientology? The only reason possible would be that that Scientologist was trying to stir up trouble. and a Scientologist doesn't do that. So that's sort of an inside answer into that question. Somebody else might have more.
Well, from a technical standpoint, it was distributed on a CD-ROM that was distributed to members in order to make their personal Scientologist online web page, of which there are tens of thousands. It's a very popular program. And in the process of installing that CD-ROM, I understand that the censoring software was installed on the individual's computer without their knowledge. And
That's correct. There are a number of Scientologists who are out there basically censor-free on the Internet. But these are Scientologists who are sent there by the Church of Scientology to, quote, handle the critics. On All Religion Scientology, there are quite a few well-known Scientologists who are out there every single day. They are on the other interactive area of the Internet, the IRC chat channels, dealing with critics, harassing critics on the Internet, spreading lies about critics. But these people are actually sent there by the Church of Scientology. This is part of their job.
This is a statement that I'm going to read from Maureen O'Keefe, who's a Scientologist sitting there. Thank you for writing it down, Maureen. She says, "Your statement is false. I am a Scientologist, and I am not required to have any net nanny on my computer. Your statement is a lie." However, I must say that Maureen is one of the OSA people who are sent out to deal with people like us, and so it is possible that she is allowed to read these things for the purposes of being able to report about what we're saying.
Can I just say something?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. So I'm not sent by anyone. I am a Scientologist. I've been a Scientologist for 20 years. And the reason I got involved, right, was because Bob Minton tried to force his way into my church, and I said I
okay.
wasn't
going to tell him.
I do not work
okay.
for the Office of Special Assistance.
Okay.
I do not work for the
Thank
church.
You.
So what you're saying is a lie.
Okay. You do not officially work for OSA. I stand corrected. She's not an official OSA operative. All right? That's enough. That's enough, Sylvia. You got to do what Maureen did. If you want to say something, you got to write it down, okay? Otherwise, you're going to have to...
I think we've gone through all the questions.
It's
the question is, Bob, why were you charged with assault at the Boston protest? Did they set you up? Would you like to answer that?
Yes, absolutely. I'd be happy to answer it. It was a clear case of a setup, in my opinion. It was a clear case of a setup in the opinion of everybody who watched the video of this event.
There's no question about that.
Why was I arrested as opposed to Frank Offman from the Church of Scientology? Because I hit Frank Offman with a stick to keep him away from me. And
then he hit your stick.
He did, yes.
But not with
it. No. Now, it's the police, the Church of Scientology's video department, run by Kevin Hall at the time, caught the part where I threw the stick at Frank Offman. This was a stick that weighed, the remains of a stick that in total weighed 2 1/8 ounces. It was a balsa wood stick. The part that was left in my hand after I was struck and the sign that I was holding broke was less than 5/8 of an ounce, which he was hit with. Now, the policeman in the back of the patrol car, he told me, he said, "Look, you know, Mr. Minton, we were here in August when you called us about this trouble here. We are sorry to be putting you in the back of this car, but we saw it on video that you hit this guy with a stick." He said, "Even had it been a bologna sandwich, you would have gone off to jail, because if you use anything, it's considered to be a dangerous weapon." So.
Okay. So, just to add something to that, I have seen the video, and I must say that there is no doubt in my mind.
And anyone else who is here who wants to see the video can actually come watch
we'll
it.
We'll have a video showing, if anybody wants to see it. But having seen it myself, there's no doubt in my mind that Frank and Kevin were under orders to set him up on an assault charge. It went on for many, many minutes. Frank often was screaming in his face. Jesse was trying to get Frank and Kevin away from Bob. They were continuously getting around Jesse and going back into Bob's face and pushing him and shoving him and screaming. at him. So I don't think there was any question about that, and I don't think the judge had any question about it because the charge ended up being thrown out of court. So, does that answer your question? Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.